Welcome to Commando On Demand Insider, your fast-paced weekly update straight from Kim's desk to your ears. I'm Mike James, and in just a bit, the amazing success story of Toshua Parker, who went from a failed Phoenix real estate investor in 2008 to a very successful grocery store owner in his hometown of Gustavus, Alaska, and how he went from $250,000 in debt to using a small airplane to supply his grocery store. Some call it Toshco. And this great story is coming up, as well as we've all heard the stories of drones eventually being everywhere, from delivery drones to drones that actually clean up sports stadiums with antiseptic. Well, Kim's going to be talking to Jonathan Bass. He's the head of marketing and communications with Wing, which is a subsidiary of Alphabet, Google's parent company, which has built an autonomous fleet of small, lightweight delivery drones that can transport small packages directly to homes in minutes. Wing has conducted more than 100,000 flight tests, and we're going to see how that's going in today's edition of Commando On Demand. And a real quick reminder, this is not the Kim Commando Show. Every week, Kim gives you the very latest in tech news, tips, DIYs, and we take the questions on the Kim Commando Show. And that is available as a podcast. You just want to go to getkim.com. If you'd like, you can try it for free for 30 days. Just use promo code Kim. That's getkim.com and use promo code Kim for your free 30-day trial. After that, it's $4.99 a month. Successful entrepreneur Toshua Parker is next.
If you think it's tough for you to get milk and eggs and disinfectant wipes, paper towels, toilet paper, imagine if you lived in Gustavus, Alaska, 48 air miles west of Alaska's state capital, Juneau, in southeast Alaska. Now, imagine this. Gustavus is completely surrounded by the distant mountains and the ice fields of Glacier Bay National Park on three sides. Okay, so it's all enclosed. The fourth side is the ocean, so it's very isolated. And when I read about Toshua Parker, I knew that you would want to know more about him too, because Tosh says the local store at the time, when he started thinking about making some changes in his life, was charging about $12 for a gallon of milk, when you could buy that gallon of milk for about $3 just 60 miles away at Costco in Juneau. So Tosh knew that there had to be a better way. There was an opportunity here. And in this time when so many people are losing their jobs, you're feeling down, you might be feeling hopeless, we need a great inspirational story. And Tosh, thanks so much for being here. First question is, toilet paper is really hard to get here in the lower 48. So how are you supplying the 500 residents with everything that they need?
Yeah, well, it was interesting when this whole hit. We found out about it when we put a order in for the week, and we got one case of toilet paper on our order for the entire community. So we figured out we had a problem and we had to get on the ball quick. So I started calling kind of everything you can imagine, every supplier down south I could find, and including some really odd ones who you wouldn't normally buy toilet paper from, and said, hey, do you guys have a pallet of toilet paper sitting up on your back stock somewhere, even for your store that you're using yourself that we could buy? So we were able to kind of at the very beginning of all this source enough pallets of toilet paper to be able to get through the worst of it until that supply chain kind of leveled back out. So we had toilet paper coming from really all over the place, from Washington, from Idaho, from multiple locations in Alaska, but it worked out. So we've yet to ever run out of toilet paper, and we have a good supply in case anything else happens.
Well, that's terrific. I'm happy to hear that. All right. So how did you come up with this idea for Toshco?
Well, yeah, this is an interesting one. I have zero retail experience. Really don't have a clue what I'm doing in retail, to be honest. I came from a background of real estate. I've been doing real estate since I was a teenager, flipping homes, mobile homes, and buying and selling, and then got into commercial real estate, and also had an online business doing information marketing related to real estate investing. And 2008 solved all those problems for me. Up until I got into commercial real estate, I had never borrowed money on any projects. It had always been cash. But then getting into big commercial projects, we ended up going to the banks and ended up losing them all in 2008. Simple things like not being able to refinance perfectly performing properties because no one was lending when the whole crash was happening. So kind of ended up coming back to Alaska with my tail between my legs, as the best way to put it, because I had to sell my home in Phoenix, close the businesses, lay off the employees, the whole shebang, and came back here and tried to decide now what. I was totally broke. I'd extended over $250,000 of credit cards and everything else during the 2008 crash, trying to keep things going, as one does, even though I never had credit card debt before. So I came back here with a huge bill and no idea what to do next. And the only thing I could see is that the local grocery store here was charging what seemed like, at the time, an exorbitant amount of money for groceries, when you could get groceries relatively affordably in Juneau, just 60 miles away. So the problem was the chain to get it there, that last mile delivery. How do you get it here efficiently? So I kind of came up with this idea to start a grocery store, as crazy as it sounds, an independent grocery store, and source the stuff in Juneau and bring it out in a boat or an airplane or a ferry or whatever it took to get it here affordably. That's kind of how the store was born. The building itself, it was an old It was a self-storage facility that I had started building before the 2008 crash and never finished. So there were no doors on it. As you can imagine, a self-storage building, there was no doors on it. It was just a bunch of openings all the way around. And there were some interior walls that were framed up for different storage units. So I went in and ripped all those out and worked on it to convert it into a store, which was an interesting task.
So you have this steel frame building, right?
It's actually wood frame up here, but yeah.
Oh, a wood frame. Okay. A wood frame building.
Uh-huh.
And you have the idea for a store and you have no money. You have $250,000 in credit card debt.
Mm-hmm.
That would make the average person just want to go ice fishing.
Yeah.
So where did you get the first funding to at least buy the supplies to build out the store? Now we're going to call it a store, to build out the store instead of the, you know, the storage place, and also buy your first round of groceries?
Yeah, well, that was difficult, obviously, being totally broke. To build out the store, I wheeled and dealed. There's a lot of strange stories. I had a buddy of mine at the time that was doing drywall work, and he wanted a pig for his local farm. So I actually took my boat down to another place in Alaska to pick up a pig for him and brought it in and trade for him doing the drywall work because I didn't have any money. Like I said, there's a lot of interesting stories that go into how it actually got done. The build out of the store itself, I mean, something as simple as you go in a grocery store and you see all the shelving. But when you have no money, where in the world do you come up with shelving or build it, or what do you do? So I happened to hear that there was a big store remodel going from one of the chain stores in Juneau, and I went into Juneau and found out that they were throwing away all their old shelving and upgrading out in the dumpsters, and talked to the contractors who informed me that they couldn't officially tell me to take it, but unofficially they leave at this time, and whatever's not the dumpster they could care less about.
So you went dumpster diving.
I went dumpster diving, and unfortunately, they had also ripped all the flooring out of the building after they put the shelving in, so I had to dig through piles and piles of warehouse flooring to get to the shelving. It was quite a project. And got a bunch of shelving, put it in my boat, brought it back here. While I was in Juneau, I found a guy that had an old refrigerator and freezer in his garage that he'd sell for $100. So I picked those up, and that's kind of how I outfitted the store, for basically no money. And then was able to do a handful of odd jobs for people, just doing weird things, trading or selling a handful of little things I had left, and came up with about $3,000 in cash to go to Costco for the first trip and buy things, which does not go very far at Costco when you're trying to come up with a grocery store, everything from cleaning supplies to milk. Basically, I got one or two of a bunch of items and brought it out, put it on the shelf, and opened. And, of course, the problem is you sell out immediately. Basically, within a few minutes, the people had come in and bought what I had. So I had to get back and go back to Juneau and do it again. So then that started the cycle of just turning inventory, just buying inventory, taking whatever margin and profit you make on it, and investing that in more inventory, and just trying to build the store up from there.
So you had a boat. At least you had a boat. What kind of boat was it in the beginning?
It was an aluminum crabbing boat, about a 37-foot aluminum crabbing boat. And then it became an issue where you couldn't – it was obvious we were going to have to resupply a couple times a day to keep up with it. And the state ferry had not started coming to Gustavus yet. So it really, the best way to bring it out at that point to get it here that frequently was an airplane. But again, I was broke, so buying an airplane didn't seem possible. But I did have one thing left. I had an old hangar building, which is one of the things I had after the crash left, and found a guy down south who wanted the building and traded me an airplane back in, I think it was Virginia or something. And so I ended up with an airplane and had a couple guys fly it up for free if I bought the fuel, just so they could get some time flying a student pilot and his instructor. So we got the plane up here, and then we started using that to fly back and forth multiple times a day to get groceries. Because like I said, we bring groceries out, sell them, and then have to go back and get more because I just couldn't afford to have anything on the shelf.
So how much groceries could you – I assume it was a small plane, right? Was it like a 172 or –
Yeah, it was a 182. Yeah, four seats, very small. Maybe put 800 pounds of stuff in there at the max. It was really limited what you could bring. And the store sales started kind of skyrocketing real quickly. It's a small town, so people found out about it. And everything from dog food to milk to softener salt went in that airplane. And it was quite a project to keep up with until the ferry started. Starting the store, I knew the state ferry was going to start service out here within the next year because that had been being planned for years. So that was always the long-term goal, is that's the way to make this scalable and work, is to use the state ferry to ship in truckloads of product. But until then, I wanted to get the store open and established, which required doing it the hard way.
Hey, don't forget, if you've got a good question about something digital, you can get Kim's unbiased advice. And it's advice that you can trust. America's digital pro, Kim Komando, on our nationally syndicated radio show. You just go to Komando.com and in the upper right-hand corner, click on the Be a Caller button. We're going to ask you your name and for a couple of details about your question. And then Manny will get in touch with you. We'll set up a time where you can be on the show, ask your question on the show. It is fun. You can call your friends and let them know that you're going to be on the show. And that's, again, the Be a Caller button in the upper right at Komando.com. All right, coming up, it's more of Kim's conversation with Toshua Parker. Some of the lessons he's learned from building a very successful grocery store in Alaska. Well, Komando listeners know technology moves so fast it's almost impossible to keep up with everything going on. And that's why there's Komando On Demand Insider. It's our way of keeping you informed and on the cutting edge of technology. And we're continuing our conversation with Toshua Parker. When we left off, he had bought a plane to help stock his stores. Here's Kim.
You have airplane fuel, you have costs. Were you flying the plane?
Myself and my father. My father was the pilot, so I kind of tapped him to fly back and forth to Juneau, but I would go with him, which was good because there's a lot of work to do. We have to go into Costco, shop everything, put it in a cart, check it out, put it in a car, put it in the airplane, fly out, unload it, put it in the car here, take it to the store, put it on the shelves, and go and do it all over again. But of course, having another person in the airplane also limits the amount of weight you can carry. So it was quite a challenge for a while. It was a full-time job and very stressful to keep up with everything.
And we told Dad he had to lose a few pounds.
I think he told me that probably.
So how did you price something? I mean, let's just say for something, for example, was $5 at Costco in Juneau. And how do you come up with what the cost of this, the cost of goods sold is going to be?
Yeah, it was really difficult because having zero grocery store experience and zero retail experience really at this point, I didn't know how to do that. So I came up with a pricing model that actually is still in effect to today. And it was basically a 33% margin on the products sold, gross margin, not including shipping or anything like that. So in your example, if it costs $5 at Costco, it would cost $7.50 on our shelf. But in that $7.50 covers all the shipping, all the handling, the store operations, and everything else. So that's the margin I came up with when it in the beginning, and we're still holding it to this day, really.
What did the owner of the current local store think about you coming in?
You know, it's hard to say. They had that. The other local store had been here since the 80s and gone through a couple ownership changes. So these were the new owners. They had both the hardware store and the grocery store at the time. I'm sure they weren't too happy about it, but they weren't that worried about it when it first started because it was just so small. It was kind of a joke. handful of items. But, you know, one of the things is they had, in my opinion, kind of missed the opportunity because people had been asking for a long time for Costco products available here in Gustavus. And I believe they always looked at Costco as almost their competitor. They're either going to buy it from our store or they're going to go to Juneau and buy it from Costco. So since they're our competitor, we're not going to buy stuff from them. And I also don't think they liked the fact that at Costco, if you buy from Costco and carry Costco items, then all your customers know exactly what you paid for them. There's no secret. And that that visibility can be uncomfortable if you have a pretty high margin, which they did at the time. So I think they kind of just poo-pooed the Costco idea and said, well, we don't want to have anything to do with that, told their customers they don't want to have anything to do with bringing Costco items in. But, I mean, that's what the customers wanted. It was pretty obvious talking to people that that's what they wanted was access to Costco out here. Because it's just like being in a city. You go to Costco frequently, unless you live a place where you can't get to one, and we could kind of supply those same products they wanted here locally.
How many different SKUs do you have on the shelves?
Boy, I wish I knew. I ought to know. It's a lot because we've expanded into hardware and lumber as well. You know, off the top of my head, I actually don't know, but it's quite a few.
So anything from flour and rice to lumber, appliances?
We bring appliances in occasionally. We don't necessarily stock them all the time, but yeah, we do bring appliances in. Pretty much someone can special order almost anything through us and we will source it and get it for them. Or we can also just freight it in for them. We do freight as well for people who are ordering products from out of town who want to bring it in.
What is the basis of the economy there in Gustavus? Is it tourist?
Yeah, the number one employer here is really the Park Service. We're right on the edge of the Park Service, pretty much surrounded by the National Park and National Monument. So they're really the number one employer. They do a lot of research. They have a lot of tourism-related activities. And secondarily to that, here in Gustavus locally, what we have is tourism. That's pretty much what we have is those two things. So it makes a season like this particularly challenging for the community because the revenue for even the Park Service is greatly dependent on tourism. They have a head tax on every passenger on a cruise ship that goes up bay. And with those cruise ships not happening, that's millions of dollars of revenue that the local National Park Service won't be getting either. So both us, you know, our small community and the Park Service gets pretty affected by things like this tourism stop that's going on right now.
And I'm sure so your sales have decreased because I assume that you probably supply goods and services to like local restaurants and businesses. I mean, somebody who might need paper plates or somebody who might need hot dogs. And has the pandemic affected you?
It has, but in a strange way. You're absolutely correct that we supply a lot of the lodges, the fishing lodges, the inns, with a lot of products. So, you know, we expect to have a pretty slow summer. But the interesting thing is so far in the spring is we've actually had a busier spring than normal. And that's we've been trying to figure out why. And I think one of the reasons is with the pandemic going on, people aren't traveling. And also the supply chain's broken a lot of places. So a lot of people that used to order groceries, say, from Juneau and have them flown in, or they take their vehicle to Juneau on the ferry, which isn't running right now in Gustavus. And maybe load up on groceries while they're there and bring it back. That's not really happening right now. So we're supplying more of the community than even normal. So it is kind of strange. We expect to get hurt this summer without the tourism. But for right now, things are going just fine.
So how many employees do you have?
Well, we have a few different companies, but between the store and we also do fuel and freight, which they're all kind of combined. They share loads between each other. So totally with everyone, it's probably about 15 people.
So you're like the guy who's coming in and owning the town there, Tosh.
Oh, now you're starting to sound like one of the locals making a joke about me.
Wait, are you going to run for mayor or what?
No, absolutely not. No, I don't need that. You know, it's one of those things is a small town. There was a lot of opportunity here in a way because there was a lot of stuff for sale. The fuel company had been established here since the 80s was for sale. There was no one doing freight really reliably at the time we started the store. So we kind of started doing freight as well and then have extended in some other businesses here. So the thing about a small community like this is great is you can do almost anything and be successful. You can hang a shingle up tomorrow and start a business and make it successful because there is no competition. It's not cutthroat. It's not all that stuff that you'd run into in a normal environment. However, the trade-off is there's no money here, or a very limited amount of money. So there's only so much business you can have at the end of the day. So after the 2008 crash and getting wiped out, I've pretty much tried to stick to businesses that are more or less recession-proof. Businesses like fuel, groceries, those kind of things that people need, necessity businesses, so that, you can kind of weather these kind of things.
So what's next for you, Tosh? You don't want to be mayor of that little town there. And, there's probably, unless you start the bank, you probably own the bank.
Yeah. Well, I don't know about a bank. I don't think I want to be in that business right now either, to be honest. I really appreciate having the opportunity here in Gustavus and to do what we've done. And we have an amazing staff here, and I don't get a chance to point that out enough. A lot of people give me credit for what's going on when the reality is it's the staff that's here working every day, in the middle of this pandemic, coming to work every single day, putting themselves at risk, that are making this thing work. It can survive at this point without me, but it can't survive without them. So, I need to give them the majority of the credit for what's going on, for sure. But, hopefully for me in the future, I'd like to get back in the technical side of things, and real estate, which is really my first love. I still do real estate on the side. I still buy and sell homes, and that kind of thing on the side. And I'm developing some online businesses around buying and selling real estate right now, actually. That would be more of a rollout nationwide. So just trying to get back into that world again slowly after kind of reinventing myself here.
Well, congratulations on Toshco. If I ever get to Gustavus, I'm going to definitely stop by and say hello.
Yes, well, appreciate it, Kim, and you're welcome to come visit. I come down to Phoenix all the time, so maybe you should come up here and visit instead.
Well, I think today it's going to be 180 degrees. I think it's like 110 this week. What's the weather like there now?
Well, I'm sitting in the shade right now, and I think it's going to be about 65, 68 today, which sounds cold if you're from Phoenix, I understand. But up here, that's blazing hot. By the time you hit 70, you're going to have heat stroke.
What is the temperature in the winter?
It's pretty mild. We have stretches where we get below zero for a short stretch, but that's usually a few days or a week. The reality is most of the time we're in the 20s and 30s, somewhere right in there. So we have pretty mild winters. We're not like the interior of Alaska that gets way below zero and stays there. But also means in the summer we don't get as warm. Further up, they get up in the 80s and higher, and we just don't get that here typically.
Well, thanks for sharing your story with us, Tosh. I do hope to meet you someday. Thanks again for joining us.
All right. Thank you, Kim.
Hey, if you love this digital stuff and you love to be on the cutting edge of what's going on, sign up for Kim's Breaking Tech News. So we've got security alerts, we've got data breaches, and much more digital know-how. It's the free Commando newsletters. You can get yours, again, free at commando.com, which is KOMANDO. And on the top, click on the Get the Newsletters button, and you got them. Next up, we've all heard all the stories about drones being everywhere, and especially delivery drones. Kim is going to talk to Jonathan Bass. He's the head of marketing and communications for Wing, which is a subsidiary of Alphabet, Google's parent company. They've built an autonomous fleet of small, lightweight delivery drones. We'll find out more next on Commando On Demand Insider.
I know that so many of you have a drone that you've been playing around with. I mean, I see your videos on Facebook and on Twitter and on Instagram and good stuff like that. And we've been hearing promises, right, for many years of getting our orders, our prescriptions, our pizzas, you name it, delivered by drones. And back in July 2015, I don't know if you remember this, the FAA granted NASA the drone delivery company, it's like Flirte and Virginia Tech, and they started delivering medicine. And then 7-Eleven and Domino's Pizza, they've been toying around with drone delivery. And then we have CVS was partnering with UPS. And of course, Amazon's drone with Prime Delivery, they've been promising that for many years. It was interesting to me that back in 2017, I don't know if you remember this, but at the Marriott Marquis Hotel in Chicago, they were actually using drones to deliver cocktails and drinks to tables of guests at some of the properties. Now, in this time of social distancing, that might actually take off. And sometimes new technology needs a compelling reason, and COVID-19 is it when it comes to drones. So Wing, a subsidiary of Alphabet, that's Google's parent company, of course, they have built this entire fleet of small, lightweight delivery drones
that can transport small packages to homes in just minutes. And they've had more than 100,000 plus flights over three different continents. What I think is interesting about the winged drone delivery service is that over the last month or so, you know, we hear about how food delivery is crazy and, you know, Costco's 2-day is now 16-day delivery and everything else. But over the past month, signups for Wing drone delivery service have increased 350%. Wow. Think about that. 350%. So joining us to talk about how drone delivery is helping during this pandemic is Jonathan Bass. He's the head of marketing and communications for Wing. Jonathan, thanks so much for joining us. Let me ask you a question. What's the strangest thing that Wing has ever delivered by a drone?
That's a great question. So lately we've been delivering a lot of single rolls of toilet paper. So that might seem strange to some folks. We delivered a wedding ring for an engagement, but that was one of our employees. An engagement ring rather. More beautiful than strange, maybe.
You know, somebody just needed one roll of toilet paper, not like 50. I mean, that seems like we're all looking at this toilet paper shortage for some reason. That's interesting. So how does the process work, Jonathan? I mean, obviously you have to be in a community. What is it? In West Virginia, you have a community. Is that right?
It's Southwest Virginia. So it's near Virginia Tech in a town called Christiansburg, Virginia. But so it works like this. We provide an app. We developed a mobile app. You pull up the item that you want on the app, and then you select a location. So we'll give you one or two options, usually your driveway, your front yard, your backyard. Then you select order, and we load the order, and the drone takes off. About 5 to 10 minutes later, it drops the package attached to a tether on the location you selected. So the entire process typically takes about 10 minutes or less.
Wow, really? That's something. So 10-minute delivery for a roll of toilet paper. Whoever knew? I mean, if you really needed it. Now, the weight of the packages, what's the limitation?
Yes, we can hold up to about 3 pounds. You know, so it's a meal for one or two people. We deliver a lot of beverages, coffee. We deliver a lot of, over-the-counter medications. So it's actually heavier than you think, 3 pounds. But yes, it's a relatively small package, lightweight.
And then what is the perimeter? So if I wanted to order something, like how many miles away is that drone capable of going?
It's around a 10-mile round trip, so 5-6 miles each way, 10 to 12-mile round trip.
And then does the drone just do one delivery, or is it capable of carrying a couple of things and making a few stops?
Each drone does one delivery, so it's a single out and back typically.
Okay, so the drone comes into my house with my meds or whatever it is, my backyard, front yard, like you said, where I specify it. Does it land on the ground, or does it drop the package down on a tether or something like that?
No, that's a great question. So it cruises at about 100, 150 feet above the ground. So well above the trees, but well below any other aircraft. And then it hovers, it drops to around 20 to 25 feet, typically 23 feet above the ground. And the package is on a hook on a tether. And it slowly lowers the package to the ground in that location, but it never really gets below about 20 feet. So it doesn't interact with anything on the ground. It's safer that way.
Wow, that's fascinating to me. So the companies that you have signed up, have they seen their sales increase?
Yes, that's been one of the more gratifying parts of what's happening right now. So we have a lot of partnerships with large organizations like Walgreens and FedEx, but also some smaller organizations, a cafe, coffee shop, and they've told us that at a time when their foot traffic has dwindled basically to nothing, this has really increased their business. We have a cafe in Virginia that says they deliver more pastries now than they did before the coronavirus outbreak. So it's allowing them to kind of keep the lights on, keep the business going while they're suffering from reduced foot traffic and sales.
You know, it's fascinating technology. I hope you get to Phoenix soon. Please come to Phoenix because I desperately want to try this out. Jonathan Bass, head of marketing communications for Wing, and that's, of course, Alphabet, Google's drone company that I expect we're going to see a whole lot more of these drones in many more communities as time goes on. Jonathan, once again, thanks so much for your time. A little update, what's going on with that company?
Thanks for listening to Commando on Demand, and a special thanks to Toshua Parker, who went from a failed Phoenix real estate investor to a very successful grocery store owner in Gustavus, Alaska. And we also talked to Jonathan Bass, the head of marketing and communications for Wing. And thank you so much for listening. Of course, we always remind you, if you haven't already, to subscribe to the podcast. You get these downloaded to your device every single week automatically. And we'll see you next time for another edition of Commando on Demand Insider. And right now, some final thoughts from Kim.
I've always wondered, with so much horrible content getting on Facebook, child porn, murders, beatings, rapes, and terrorism, what kind of material is left to get filtered out? Who does it? The answer is shocking. Whatever unspeakable content that's actually censored, never making it to Facebook, is done by a staff of so-called moderators, mostly third-party contract labor who work for other companies hired by Facebook. The Verge reports that thousands have been so traumatized by having to watch live actual child abuse, murder, suicides, you name it, that Facebook is paying more than 11,000 of them $1,000 in compensation, and up to 50,000 if ever in the future they're diagnosed with PTSD related to all the disturbing content on Facebook. That's how bad it really is on Facebook. I'm Kim Commando.